Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
I understand that you were in Kansas, not far from me. I'm in Manhattan, Kansas, where I'm a professor at K-State. And you were in Atchison.
Yes, absolutely.
What was the... I've heard about all the hauntings in Atchison. What were you there for?
Well, primarily we were there to investigate a home known as the Dilgert House. A young woman and her brother actually jointly purchased the property, and their plan was to renovate it. They said they got a steal of a deal on it. They were going to sink some money into renovating the house. And I think what they really wanted to do was kind of bring it back to its original grandeur. It really is just a very nice old historic property. And
right.
Once again, renovations come into play. They start to renovate the house and things go completely haywire.
And that's in an upcoming episode.
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Well, when we last left this episode before the top of the hour, you were just about to tell us what the psychic investigator had told you. This was after you had located a doll that is in the attic, which is in the first episode, and then you were discussing the possibility that maybe all the bad vibes around this house have to do with the fact that so many homes had been burned during a smallpox outbreak in Iva, Michigan, and that it's possible that some people had been entombed in their homes when they got smallpox and were nailed into their home so they didn't come out and infect anybody else. And that's where we had to break it off before we got to the top of the hour. So where were you going with that?
Well, basically, you know, you were asking me about the doll specifically.
Right.
Talking about the different ways that it played into the episode and what our thoughts were. But one of the things that the psychic had told the family that I thought was pretty interesting was that some of the items in the house could be troubling or upsetting to those victims of the epidemic. Like, for instance, there was that painting on the wall that we saw the scratch marks in the glass.
Yeah.
And if you kind of pause on it and examine that painting, you'll see that at first it looks like a woman tucking in her daughter going to bed. But then when you look at the top left background blended in there, there's a bunch of angels looking down. And when you kind of look a little bit more at it, it almost looks like a sickly child. And that the mother's trying to comfort it, and she thought maybe that could be triggering some of the thoughts and some of the emotions of that tragedy, just like the doll of a young child that looked pretty disfigured,
right.
And that could be upsetting as well, and from that time frame. So just
yes.
Something I thought was, noteworthy.
Yeah, it is noteworthy, and it goes to show you, though, too, that there are so many ways to look at these things, right? And I pride myself on being very open-minded on these conversations, but I'm also a seeker in terms of trying to come up with some kind of cosmology to all of these discussions, because it's extra canonical. It's not in the Bible, this idea that we often talk about people being trapped on Earth as ghosts and that that you go up to heaven automatically as an angel, or these are part of traditions, and they have power in our imaginations. But that's what I'm always trying to figure out, is exactly how should we look at this? For example, when you had an early recording in the investigation of something which you interpret to mean get out, that you put down a recorder and you went back and you played it back, and you hear get out in that recording. And I think if the entity is so strong, and if these things are what we imagine them to be or we claim them to be, why wouldn't it be a very strong get out? Why do we think that it's this sort of hard to hear, scratchy, set of frequencies which we interpret to mean something?
Well, that is a very good question. I mean, that's, I've often thought similar things. I mean, you think if an entity has the power to scratch you, for instance, like the granddaughter was scratched in the home, if
right.
whatever was in the house was upset by my presence, why didn't it scratch me?
Right.
why didn't I see the smoke, or why didn't it appear to me? And, that's the thing. There's no exact science to this, of course, and I certainly never believe that I have all the answers.
Right. But, and I'm not expecting you to. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. But even just like, okay, so let's not even go with exact science. Let's not even go with an exact theology. But I can't even get, I'm trying to get a cohesive one that kind of holds water a little bit on what we think happens. So, for example, when you talk about attaching a spirit, attaching to an object, how do you account for that? How do you see that as happening?
Well, I guess my best theory would be that, if we're looking at all activity is energy, human okay. energy, spirit energy, energy period. Could it be in fact kind of, trapped, so to speak, within that object, kind of like residual activity can be trapped or encompassed in a home or ingrained into the wood and kind of dispersing and replaying? I guess that would be about my closest guess of how that is physically possible, if that makes sense.
No, it totally, and I get that. And I'm not trying to be like the worst guy in the room, right? Who's everybody's talking about the All-Star game, and I start saying baseball's stupid. I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm just trying to say, how is it that for example, if we talk about energy, then I guess part of that would be somehow on some astral plane, these objects are like covered with a kind of paranormal St. Elmo's fire that we can't see, but somehow becomes attached. And that's the part that I think, well, why is it this time and not that time? How is it here and not there? Why was this such a tragedy? Although it's a very interesting story. And by the way, I love that library that you go to. Was that the Hoyt Library? Is that what you went to go to investigate?
Yeah, it really is. It's a remarkable building.
Oh, it's beautiful. Was that your library when you were a kid?
No, actually it wasn't. But the Hoyt Library is a very old historic place. It's carved out of a lot of sandstone.
Yeah.
It really is beautiful.
Yeah. But I mean, so like when we go to investigate that, that's a kind of, I'm trying to find a kind of consistency to this, and it's confounding to me, because I want there to be one. I want there to feel like, okay, now we can anticipate this, but so much of it seems experiential and anecdotal and not anything that we could ever call predictive. But in that way, too, I mean, it's also hard to dismiss the power of the sincerity of the testimony. And that's definitely the strength, I think, of the, at least in the first episode that you have of Haunting in the Heartland. What about some of the other episodes coming up? What, tell us about some of the other places that you're going to take us to.
Well, you know, one case that really stands out to me strongly is a small farming town of Melbourne, Iowa. And that particular instance, the story goes there that a woman who was recently divorced ended up, you know, meeting a gentleman that she fell in love with, and they started a relationship. She moved into a home with her two sons to kind of stand on her own and start over. And when the time was right, she felt that, you know, her new boyfriend, fiance, should move in with them. And when he did move in with them, activity began happening in the home. Pretty frightening stuff. The two young boys had told us that they would see an apparition of what they referred to as a bloody witch, and that it was a woman with a kind of ratted hair and blood-soaked clothing would come out of the closet and stand by them, kind of mouth gaping open, and then just vanish or sometimes go back into the closet. So needless to say, the two boys were, you know, terrified of their room and of the house. And then the fiance, the soon-to-be husband, started experiencing apparitions of a little girl with black eyes. So a lot of visual things happening in the house. Anyway, at one point, there's kind of a determination that it seems to be surrounding the fiance. When he moved in, that's kind of when all this began. And they were very concerned for him, as he felt that something was following him from something that he had engaged in his past.
Hmm. Love that. And have you, I mean, what I think one of the things that you have that you mentioned last hour that I think is a strength of these investigations are the third party testimony from people who may not have witnessed what the experiencer said, but could attest to contributing facts. And for example, the police department or the fire department that kept being called to this one home in Michigan, in Merrill, Michigan. But so what were you able to find out about this particular story, if you can tell us a little bit, that helped to support what was being claimed?
Well, there was a lot of claims in that community of a woman being seen in a cemetery that they believed to be the restless soul of Inez Gibson. And, so we started to pursue that angle. We talked to a lot of people in the town that would see this apparition in different places, which was pretty interesting, from a local cemetery to walking up and down the street and even appearing in other people's homes.
Ooh.
So, you know, right away we kind of thought, okay, well, you know, maybe this could in fact be the little girl that has been seen in the house. And as we continued to investigate and go into the cemetery, we started getting some pretty disturbing things on the geoport and other things that led us to believe that, you know, perhaps this isn't the spirit of one soul doing,
sure.
You know. Yeah, exactly. It's I don't want to give away too much, but
I don't want you to either.
Yeah, it took a pretty dark turn. We had to bring out a demonologist and some things had to be performed.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll be watching for that. Again, this new series starring Steve Shippey runs Friday nights on the Travel Channel, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific, 9 o'clock Central. And Central is the focus because it's the heartland. So does this mean you're getting kind of territorial? That, like, if some other show wants to come and investigate something, you're like, hey, man, we do the heartland. Back off. This is our territory.
I'm going to let the air out of their tires.
You're from Michigan. I wouldn't mess with you. You know, you gotta let them know. You know, you got a rapper posse. I wouldn't mess with you. But I do think that's interesting. So, what is your mandate in terms of where you want to cover, where you want these stories to come
well,
from?
You know, pretty much the Heartland region to me is you know, it's the entire Midwest and, you know,
Ohio.
Yeah, even with Haunting in the Heartland, the first season, I mean, we did go all the way down to Mississippi and then even over as far as Greenville, Tennessee. So, You know, to me personally, the Heartland is kind of a frame of mind. To me, it's more of a rural community, more of the salt of the earth type of people. We definitely want to stay away from the coast and any major city.
Yeah, who wants that? They could take their stinky old ghost stories. We'll take the ones in the Midwest. I like that idea. So what some people on the coasts might think of as flyover country, however you define it.
Well, yeah, and to me, that's kind of the beauty of it. In fact, I sometimes refer to the Midwest as kind of the gray zone. I mean, we know that there's some incredible cases on the East Coast as like kind of the mecca of paranormal
right.
investigation. But, you know, to me, that path less chosen, the folklore of these small communities, I guess because I, you know, grew up in a small community in the Midwest, really, I kind of gravitate to that. And I think there's a lot of stories and a lot of hauntings to be investigated that no one's ever even heard of. And I really enjoy that process more.
Yeah, y'all are like the American pickers of ghost stories.
A little bit.
I mean, in a good way. That, like, you know, you're looking for barn finds. You're going to the places where perhaps other shows had never thought to bring a portable camera, and you're going to be there. But that's interesting too, because I think there's something. I mean, I love the Midwest. I grew up outside of Chicago originally, but then I went to the University of Illinois, and I spent a lot of time in different places. I was in Minnesota for a long time, and Iowa, and I learned. I think there's a kind of there, you know, in the especially where you were in Saginaw, you could even claim that that's sort of the Rust Belt. Right, that upper Midwestern former largely industrial area, which then suffered greatly in the 70s recession and then beyond. And there's something about the decay of these areas. There's something about the way in which these weathered towns are holding it together against all. I mean, it would seemingly be almost without even a purpose, some of these small towns are staying on the map. And you hit on a couple of those already as you were talking about like places like Merrill, Michigan and Iva. And there's something about the decay about that seems to parallel these ghost experiences.
Yeah, you know, 100%. And that was actually very beautifully said. I mean, the way you just described, you know, the Midwest and the Heartland is exactly how I see it. It is amazing that the way that you worded that, almost without purpose, it's strange because these, you know, people are rooted in these communities, even generationally. And like you said, there were times with the big booms of the automotive, Saginaw, even further back with the lumber era. It's had its ups and downs, but at the same time, it's just home, and you just have to make it work with whatever the economy is or what there is or what there isn't. It's just home. It just is.
But like just like you were describing, though, with the people that were renovating houses, it's almost like the area is resisting modernization. Like it in that sense that even the homes themselves are you know, they, some of them have really good bones, but some of them are kind of beyond repair. You know, they've taken too many freeze and thaw cycles, and you can't put the nails back in again. You have to put up new boards. And I wonder whether if there's that connection between renovation and ghost investigation, it's that. It's a sense that these houses are sort of defying standing up straight anyway in many cases, and maybe the only thing that's holding them together are just the memories of their former greatness.
You know, that very well could be. It is pretty amazing how a lot of these small communities do resist change in a lot of ways, you know, and it's just it's, you know, part of that interesting fabric that really is that Rust Belt, you know, community. We see that all through the Heartland. You know, of course, the different towns that we went to were, you know, vastly different in some senses, you know, maybe geographically, like the mountainous
right.
region of Greenville and whatnot, but very much the same characteristics and people as well. Maybe their accents are different, but they're very much the same.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com.
the hottest games right from Vegas, and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino.
That world has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie and Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets, Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network. Work.